Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Attention fans of Vikings Valhalla, the second season of your fave program shows up Thursday on Netflix with another season in the works. And executive producer and showrunner Jeb Stuart joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Our second 30 minutes features Obsession Media, out to be one of this year's new players in channel creation. Outdoor America, which started in 2019, will be joined this spring by motorsports-minded Speed Sport One and other next later. Chief Executive Nick Rhodes details all. Also ahead, CES wraps for 2023. Greg Berlanti set to stay at Warner Brothers, the latest Axe AMC series, our first classic trivia winner this year, and something smart TV players that we didn't get to see from CES 2023 last week. I'll explain in the comments. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. 44 wonderful degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. And we welcome you on this Monday afternoon to the program all about TV's current and future. Happy to have you with us. A pair of great guests coming away in the hour and change ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in. And here's the number you use. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, that's no problem with us. We got a chat room ready and willing to take you in. All you have to do is go to blogtalkradio.com/televised and get in the chat room known as Simon Apple 04 by name. It's just waiting for you. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Stream. Follow the instructions of the Disney Live with you. Jeff Stewart, the executive producer and showrunner of Vikings Valhalla, joins us live from Florida after these news notes. The curtain is down on CES 2023, the annual Consumer Electronics Showcase taking place in Las Vegas. More than 115,000 people visited the event over the last 5 days, far more than last January's production, the first in person since the coronavirus pandemic outbreak in 2020. More than 3,200 companies, including the majority of TV set makers, exhibited there, also an increase from 2022. More on what came out of CES 2023 in Vegas in terms of smart TV innovations and why you didn't hear about them from a lot of press later in this episode through a comment. Prolific TV series maker Greg Berlanti will stay in the Warner Brothers TV landscape through 2027. Berlanti signed a new mini-studio-type affair to his current WB series commitment this afternoon. The new arrangement allows Berlanti to develop and put programs on any service, including HBO, HBO Max, and other Warner Brothers distributed services, such as Warner Brothers Discovery services like TBS, TNT, and so forth. Other terms were not disclosed. Separately, Netflix announced that You, the series Berlanti's Enterprise originally running on Lifetime, will start season 4 on Netflix February 9th. The series Bloodbath at AMC Networks continues. The latest victim, acclaimed science fiction tune Pantheon, which premiered last fall. AMC had a 2-year deal for the series, with the second season episodes ready to air. In recent weeks, AMC has axed several series set to debut or return this year, including Moonhaven, 61st Street, and Invitation to a Bonfire, starring and executive produced by Tatiana Maslany. No word yet from Pantheon's production team, led by creator and exclusive producer Craig Silverstein, who has a deal with AMC, about efforts to move season 2 elsewhere. Now, before our first guest, we've got some quickies. Bumper in Berlin, Peacock's TV series take on the popular Pitch Perfect film franchise, will get a second season. Rabbit Hole, Paramount Plus's long-awaited corporate espionage saga with Kiefer Sutherland as both actor and executive producer, will debut March 26th. Also, we've just learned that finally, Grease, Rise of the Pink Ladies, a series that's been long planned at Paramount Plus, will debut the following month. And Bernard Kalb, the former State Department reporter at CBS NBC News, then first host of CBS's media review series Reliable Sources, passed away yesterday, according to his brother Marvin Kalb. Complications from a fall. He was 100. He lived a great century. And that is news notes for today. Once upon a time, the History Channel, both here in the United States and in Canada, did scripted series. And its longest-running one was Vikings, created by the historical drama master Michael Hirst. The series started in 2013, ran 6 seasons, had its final episodes in both the U.S. and Canada in 2020. Well, didn't stay down for long. A brand new series based on that, called Vikings Valhalla, which takes it to the next level, premiered on Netflix last February. And this Thursday, the second season of that series will premiere, and guess what? For all you fans out there, there is a third in the works. Joining us live from West Palm Beach, Florida, in an internet radio exclusive, executive producer and showrunner, Jeb Stewart. Jeb, welcome to our program, and Happy New Year to you. All right, hold on for a second. There we go. Jeb, Happy New Year to you, and welcome to our program. Jeb, are you there? Jeb, for some reason, we're not hearing you on the line. Hang on for 1 second. Let's see if we can get him. Hold on, everybody.
Tommy, can you hear
me? Jeb, are you there? There we go, Jeb. Happy New Year. Welcome to our program. Yep, Jeb, go ahead. This is a little strange, folks. We are, for some reason, he just got on the line and just stopped. Let's try one more time.
Simon?
There we go.
Can you hear me?
All right, Jeb, you're on. How are you doing? That is, oh, he just dropped off the line. All right, Jeb, you just dropped off the line. Give us a call back, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you back on ASAP. And we apologize. For some reason, there was an issue with the line. We're not sure whether it was from Blog Talk Radio's end or from Jeb's end or Netflix's end or my end. So, Jeb, give us a call back, ASAP, 646-652-2906. All right. I think we now have Jeb on the line. Let's try one more time. All right. Let's see if we finally have him.
Simon, can you hear me?
There we go. Jeb, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. All right. It's great to have you on, and Happy New Year to you and all your Vikings crew. So how are things going getting ready for season two?
We're very excited. It's a totally different experience getting out with season two and as opposed to season one when no one really knew what we were. And it's a fun show, and I think it's got the audience is very excited about what's coming down the pike for season two.
Given the success that the History Channel had with Vikings, which was its longest running scripted series, what kind of expectations were there for this series to develop its own identity, its own space, if you will?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges that we had was it was not going to be a History Channel show. It was going to be a Netflix show. It had a, you know, as we all know, and I think you set it up perfectly in your intro, it was History Channel's, I think, best piece of scripted programming. It had Michael Hurst, who, as we all know, is a terrific writer of great historical drama. But Netflix was reaching to a different audience, so their expectations are different. It's a different challenge. It's a much bigger international audience. And I'm a different writer than Michael. Obviously, I've known Michael for years. Great respect for each other. We've developed projects together. But you know, he wrote Elizabeth, and I wrote Nightlight. So there's a different type of show. And I didn't want to do a season seven of Vikings. I wanted to find a new period, a new era that to talk about. And so I focused on the emergence of the Viking era, which starts in the 8th century. I wanted to focus on sort of the ending phase of the Viking era, which I thought was very exciting because it included some of the best and most recognizable Vikings of the Viking era. You know, people like Leif Erikson and his sister, Freydis Erik's daughter, and Erik the Red, and of course Harald Sigurdsson, who became known as Harald Hardrada. And the expectation is the biggest thing, Simon, that changed from one to the other.
Mm-hmm. The good news is that you have a lot of years and a lot of historical background to play with. I mean, a lot of people know about Leif Erikson from learning about the Vikings in high school or public school, but there's a lot of characters, both real and could be fictional, that you can play with because of the landscape of that era.
That's very true. You know, one of the big differences between Michael's series and our series in Valhalla is that in Michael's world, it was still coded in myth. You could do things because there was never a written Viking language. So everything was passed orally. The tales were sort of shrouded in all sorts of great, you know, parts of it. And, of course, a lot of what we know about the Vikings either came from the people that they conquered, their, you know, their enemies or the people and, you know, all around that part of Northern Europe that they, you know, attacked. Or it came from the sagas, which were written, you know, another 200 or 300 years, you know, farther down the road when, and they were mainly done by Icelandic scholars. So from my theories, now people have started to put history down. We're getting into times where there's a lot more known about the Vikings than we're known about it in the earlier days. That puts a little bit of stress on me to kind of not veer very far from the historical tracks that we've got. And at the same time, it still leaves a lot of ground for the gray area of history to have fun in.
Mm-hmm. How did the mandate from Netflix and the fact you wanted to create a totally separate series from what Michael did, how did that impact your style of producing and show running?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to do was I wanted to put a lot more action into the shows. I wanted to not that Vikings lacks action, but it was a different type of action. I felt like it was being written for a streaming network, so that you know, which is a little bit different. The history show came off as a once a week show. A lot of those episodes, if you watch today, they come to a cliffhanger piece, and then there's a wait until next Tuesday until the next episode dropped and that sort of thing. They were also written on a five-act structure. So, you know, from a writing standpoint, that's a big deal because you're selling advertising on the History Channel. Valhalla is written as a small, it's like a mini movie. It gets going and it doesn't stop. And then it just propels you into the next episode. So, there were a lot of structural differences between the two, but I would say that the biggest difference was just in terms of the scope and the scale that we tried to achieve on Valhalla.
Vikings Valhalla begins its second season this Thursday on Netflix, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, also in some cases on multi-channel bundles, and in some cases through your local cable operator. And we have an exclusive interview going on right now, live from West Palm Beach, Florida, with the executive producer and showrunner of the series, Jeb Stewart. And Jeb is with us for the rest of this half hour here on Smart TV Televised. Happy you're with us as well as we kick off our first episode, Triple Header Week, of the new year. Simon Avalon with you live from Nueva York, 44 degrees at the top of the hour. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our second episode of the week comes your way on Thursday, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, and joining me will be fresh off the debut of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches last night on AMC, AMC Plus, Sundance TV, IFC, and BBC America, one of the co-stars, wonderful actress, Annabeth Gish, and Friday on Tawabi Televised in our regular time period. Among our guests, the wonderful technology columnist for Media Village, haven't had him in a long time, Jeff Minsky. He was at CES 2023 last week in Las Vegas. We'll get his thoughts about what TV developments came out of there. That's all Thursday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tawabi Televised. One of the interesting things you have about your series is that you get an opportunity to sort of open us up to other worlds of the Viking phenomenon that we don't hear about a lot. We know about Leif Erikson. We know about his explorations. We don't know a lot about his sister, who, by the way, Leif is played by Sam Corlett. His sister, Freydis, is played by Frida Gustafsson. But we also don't know about Nordic princes, and in this case, one played by Leo Suter. And I'm curious how that plays in, not only in the first season, but also plays in this new season.
Well, I think one of the great things about Valhalla is that we get to take our Vikings out of the Scandinavian and England orbit and get them out of their comfort zone. We do follow Harald Sigurdsson, the character that's played by Leo Suter, and we follow them in a historical track. At the end of season one, you know, all three of our heroes get sort of, you know, their destinies get crushed. So, you know, they think that they know which path that they're on, and it turns out that that's not the correct path. One of the cool things about season two is that we get to bring these Vikings into totally different orbits in different places, getting them and mixing them with with different ethnicities and cultures and thought patterns and things like that. Harald, we know, left Scandinavia after the defeat, you know, in Norway, and he went to visit his uncle, who was Yaroslav the Wise, who was in the Kievan Rus. He was the leader of both Kiev and Novgorod, and we pick him up in Novgorod. And he went there asking for an army so that he could go back to Norway, and his uncle basically said, no, I'm not going to provide you with an army. If you want to succeed, you're going to have to remake yourself. You have to rebuild your legacy. And that began a good 10 or 12-year period, which we covered the first part of, where Harald and his accompanied by Leif traveled down the Dnieper River, which they did, and the Vikings had done for over 100 years, and they head to Constantinople. And, of course, just that journey itself, it becomes a road movie in which he's suddenly confronted by people that don't look like Vikings, that don't talk like Vikings, that don't worship like Vikings. And it expands the whole Viking universe. And, of course, the cool thing for me is that this is all Harald's history, and it's the history of the Vikings. And, you know, as we know, there's Viking DNA all over the place. So it's a very organic story to this period.
El Gozo just is our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. You have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. A lot of people don't know about the process of filming a saga like this. What are the challenges of – I believe you did this in Europe. What are the challenges of making a show overseas – and doing it, having it be a historical epic?
One of the great benefits of doing of coming in behind Michael Hirst was the ability to work with the great Irish crew that made Vikings. That gives you a tremendous leg up. I mean, we do lots and lots of research. We have our own, you know, team of historians and researchers and that sort of thing. But the crew itself, you know, we have a Viking fleet, which we've expanded multiple times since the last of the original Viking shows. We build our own boats. We have hair and makeup that can put, you know, 200 or 300 people out in the field. We have a great, phenomenal group of extras who are used to playing Vikings, who are terrific. If you've been in the business of making action shows and stuff as long as I have, you can really appreciate extras who get it, who really enjoy the process and can work with production, and a crew that just is like second to none. I was in L.A. not too long ago for the press junket of Valhalla, and another filmmaker called me up and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about going to Ireland to shoot. What do you think?" And I told him it was terrible. I just don't want anyone to take my crew away. They're just a great group and a terrific group of filmmakers. So it helps a lot when you've got that type of expertise and you're trying to do a really ambitious action show. So I would say that was the biggest help, Simon, when you're trying to do a show of this size, is to work with professionals who really get it.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, when you're shooting a historical epic like Vikings Valhalla on such a wide canvas, both script-wise and cinematography-wise, given where you're shooting, is it almost like, in a way, shooting a nature documentary where you have to wait for Mother Nature or Father Nature to do their thing? They in a way serve as like a director. You know, you can't do it unless you get the perfect condition to film.
Unfortunately for us, we are still a TV show, and a TV show marches to its own rhythm, and it has its own, I come from the feature world where, a situation like you just described, you know, was doable. It's supposed to snow today, so but it's going to snow tomorrow, so we're going to wait, we'll shoot something else. We really don't have that, that luxury, and so the great thing about that is that it's pouring down rain, let's say, and it's, 40 degrees and the wind is howling and it's blowing our base camp away and stuff like that. Well, that turns out to be great, a great environment to shoot a big action show. So our actors get out there, our crew gets out there. You know, we have everybody, you know, working in just really, really rugged conditions, and we make it work every day. We make it work, and I think that it gives a sort of verisimilitude to the show that, you know, you don't see on other shows, and that's part Ireland and part you know, who we are, sort of in the DNA of the show.
You're hearing Jeff Stewart. He is the executive producer and showrunner of Vikings Valhalla. Season 2 starts this Thursday on Netflix. Season 3, and we'll talk more about that in a few moments. If you have a question or comment on our Many Minutes with Jeff, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our next half hour, we're going to talk to the head of a company that wants to make new channels. It's called Obsession Media. They're out in Los Angeles. They already have one channel on the air. It's been around actually for several years, called Outdoor America. And this spring, they want to get a second channel, maybe first of several they want to get on the air this year, called Speed Sport One. It's a live motorsports and all about the motorsports field channel. We'll talk to Nick Rhodes. He's in L.A. We'll talk to him in another interview, exclusive interview coming up in our next half hour. Also, we have our first Classic Trivia winner of the year and our second weekly winner in a row. You'll find out who it is, and you'll get the answer to that question and what our winner will win. That's also coming up in our next half hour, so stay tuned for all of that. What's been, for you and the cast and the crew, the most gratifying about the viewer response, not just here in the United States, but around the world, to your show?
I you know, we were, as I mentioned before, we were all out in L.A. A few weeks ago, you know, getting ready for the start of the season. And one of the things that we all got to experience was a screening of the first the first episode of season 2, and it was a screening with with lots of fans of the show. Not last year, we were trying to explain to people on, you know, a call like this, of saying, this is what's different, this is what it's supposed to be, this is what we're striving to be. The most gratifying thing for all of us now is that we have created a show which I think pays great homage to its, you know, predecessor, the original Viking show, and yet it's its own animal. It has its own characteristics. It has its own, you know, balance and speed and pace and things like that. And it has a different group of characters. And so I think it's fun to see it where it actually has its own group of fandom, where people are looking forward to the changes with these particular characters and seeing what we've cooked up for the next block, the next part of the saga. And I you can feel it. And that's one of the things that drives all of us when we're making the show, because we are making it outside of, you know, and we were making it in COVID. So we're in this sort of bubble. For 2 years, we did a show no one had heard about or seen, or it was just us. And we had to sort of believe in what we were doing. So it was a lot of fun to see it with an audience, which we had not been able to do during the COVID period.
So, since you brought up the subject, what do you have cooked up for season 2, which starts on Thursday?
Well, as I mentioned before, we take our Vikings on the road, so to speak. Freydis, who is still in search of, she was tapped in season 1 as being, you know, the keeper of the flame, the keeper of the old ways. And she is drawn to a mythic place in Viking lore called Jomsborg. Jomsborg, or the Joms Vikings, were a well-known group of Uber Vikings, and they were based just outside of Scandinavia. They were based in the Baltic, more on the coast of Pomerania. Historians have never found the actual site of Jomsborg, but historically it's written about a good bit. And we know that at this particular time in the 11th century, Jomsborg really represented in the Baltic area, the last sort of, you know, holdout for the pagan ways. So Freydis, her story takes her to Jomsborg. The other part of her story takes place going down the Dnieper River. And Harald and Leif follow the historic track of lots of Vikings as they go from Novgorod in the north all the way down the Dnieper to the Black Sea and on to Constantinople, which was a great part of their story. So it's an exciting road trip for everyone, and it's a part of changing their legacy, of of not just being, not accepting the destiny that they thought was theirs, but to sort of find the deeper meanings behind what they were supposed to do with their lives. So and by the way, there's a lot of action and a lot of thrills and a lot of suspense in the season.
You went into season two with a third season in the bag. How does that impact how you are able to lay out your ultimate storyline? How does that impact your development, how you let's say, put your program together, knowing that you have a third season that you can expand things from this season?
Well, the good news is that you know where you're going, or hopefully you know where you're going. And in this case, when I pitched this to Netflix, I had a pretty good idea of where we would go over the course of three seasons. And obviously, we hope that there's a four, five, and six out there because these stories are not fully told yet. But what that does is it allows us to think about how are we going to get there? How do we take a character that was designed to, you know, maybe last one season or even one episode, and suddenly we realize that this character becomes more important. We can bring him along for a longer part of the ride. So the good news is that you do have that time. The difficult part of that is that you want to change characters. You want to, you know, have people evolve. It is a Viking show. It's tough. It's tough to survive in the 11th century, just as in any tough medieval story. But with the challenges of that, you still have the benefit of saying, good, how are we going to get there? How are we going to make this work? How are we going to twist this back? As I said, from a storytelling standpoint, sometimes things change when you're writing that you didn't anticipate. I can remember, Michael Hurston was telling me that, you know, he never anticipated, you know, Ragnar lasting out of the first four or five episodes. And sure enough, next thing you know, he's there for four seasons. So you never know as you go along what you're going to find. But in this case, it helped me tremendously to know that I had the three seasons, that I could plot things out, and I could sort of absorb the good as well as the bad as I was working on it.
Let's end on this note. Was there a character or a plot line in the first season that hit home with so many viewers that you decided, along with your team, let's expand on this in season two. Let's take this another level. The audience seems to think we're onto something, so let's give them what they want.
Well, there were a lot of them. One of them I'll share with you was the fact that historically we know that Leif Erikson became one of the great, you know, Christian, you know, proselytizers, you know, of this particular period. And I always felt that we should get to that revelation, you know, early in the storytelling. But as I was going along and I got to know Leif better, Leif the character better, I felt that this should be, you know, we should not just have this miraculous turn of his character to go from being a pagan to a Christian. And one of the great things about that decision to sort of unpeel the onion over, a longer throw allowed me to expose him to all sorts of different cultures and thoughts, and so that his eventual change to Christianity comes from a different place other than something, like a road to Damascus when a single moment. It's a much more detailed piece. And I think that, you know, having an actor like Sam Corlett allows you to do stuff like that in a way that, is more holistic. So that's one example of things that change.
Vikings Valhalla begins its second season this Thursday on Netflix. And you can check out Netflix, of course, on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, multi-channel bundles, and in some cases through your local cable operator. For more details about the service online, go to Netflix.com. It's Netflix.com. Vikings Valhalla, Season 2 starts Thursday, Season 3 coming 2024. or later. Jeff Stewart, the executive producer and showrunner of the program, thank you for joining us. Again, Happy New Year to you and your crew. Congratulations on the start of Season 2, and hopefully, like you said, many more to come.
Thank you, Son. Great to talk to you as always.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Let's do it again soon. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Jeff Stewart, executive producer and showrunner of Vikings Valhalla, joining us live from West Palm Beach, Florida. When we come back, meet someone who wants to create new channels. He's got one on the way called Speed Sport One, others to come. The company is called Obsession Media. The man is Nick Rhodes, who joined me from Los Angeles after we paused at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out on BTR, the podcast and program all about Star Trek. It's Trek Talking, and it's on today at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific. That's Trek Talking today, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Great to have you aboard. We have another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. Welcome to those who are just joining us at the bottom of the hour. And if you want to begin the conversation, very simple. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. One thing is very clear about this incredible TV environment going into 2023. We are seeing more and more efforts to create new television channels, new programming services that are available to you on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. And today, we're going to feature yet another company that's out to do that in more ways than one. In fact, they're already doing it in one way with a channel they launched back in 2019 called Outdoor America. The company's called Obsession Media, and this spring, it'll be launching a second channel called Speed Sport One, all about the world of motorsports, including live event coverage. Joining me live from Los Angeles, the founder and chief executive of the company, Rick Rhodes. Nick, welcome in.
Thanks, Simon. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. What was the obsession about forming your company in the first place?
Well, I want to give credit. I'm a co-founder. It was founded in partnership with John West, who is a longtime colleague and friend of mine and worked with us at Speed Vision and Outdoor Life in the 90s. And he was working in the outdoor industry with independent producers at the same time I was talking to distributors and tracking what was happening in terms of available shelf space was coming on both connected TVs as well as broadcast TV spectrum. And the conversation between us kind of led to the idea, would it be possible to go back in to, you know, target these enthusiast markets where we'd had success in the cable world previously as the distribution became available. So that was the genesis of it, and Outdoor America was the first brand we focused on because we knew where there was a volume of high-quality programming that, for the most part, as the MVPD universe was shrinking, was evergreen in nature and hadn't been seen by a large portion of an interested audience.
Before we get into Outdoor and about Speed Sport One and the other services that your company wants to make possible this year and beyond, what do you think about this environment where, thanks to smart TV sets and smart TV devices and multi-channel bundles, we have seen over the last 2.5-3 years this incredible explosion of new programming services? Some are basically like all The Walking Dead 24/7 or this show 24/7, but a lot of them are being very ambitious with new original programming or genre programming that is quite remarkable when you see it.
Well, I think the CTV marketplace is rapidly matured, and it's generating meaningful revenue and margins for the manufacturers, the OEM, as well as certain Tier 1 OTT platforms. And it's kind of a natural evolution for them to go into owned and operated channels, owned and operated brands. I think the proliferation of, you know, the onset, I think a lot of these entities were just trying to fill out a lineup initially. And then as it grows and the economics get to where they are now, you're starting to see the major media companies come in and, you know, seek multiple services. They're aggressively packaging libraries and channel offerings. And I think underperforming channels will be replaced. And you can expect that shuffling to continue more or less dynamically as the consumer behavior codifies around the non-MVPD platforms. So it's been a bit of a wild west. I mean, you know, it's been great. awfully glad that you're still kind of chronicling and advising the industry, Simon. We go back probably 30 years from the first time we met, and you think about what life was like when you had an exclusive monopoly MVBD middleman. And so these new economics, it's the Wild West. It's changed pretty dramatically, pretty radically, and it's still early stage. So I think, you know, the next few years will kind of sort everything out a bit, but you can expect major media companies to continue to be aggressive, and you can expect the connected TV platforms that have leverage and are in that top tier to continue to create their own brands.
And, Nick, it's not just the major media companies. Also, a lot of new players like yourself. We have Best Ever Channels on the air on Friday with their chief executive. There's Cinedigm, which has been making new channels and also packaging library content. There's Trusted Media Brands, Homey Jukin Media. There's all these new companies that, and even Spanish language companies like Canela Media, Estrella TV, and Western TV that are also creating services. It really is a wild west, and like you said, it promises to get wilder.
Yeah, I think in our case, we're kind of staying in areas where we've had success historically, and we have a good knowledge base, and we have relationships with the key suppliers. And we're also kind of focused on bedrock audiences that maybe aren't as sexy as, and certainly fun listening to the first half hour of the program and you know, a showrunner and a Netflix show and thinking about all that goes into that kind of original scripted entertainment. You know, we have audiences that are enthusiast audiences, so they're naturally going to be smaller in size than the big audiences to successful scripted entertainment, but they're very passionate about the editorial. And they also represent a over-consumer, a heavy consumer of endemic products and services. So we kind of focus on areas where we know there's going to be a demand from these endemic sponsors to pay a premium to reach this passionate consumer. And that's where you see Outdoor America and, you know, soon to be, you know, Speed Sport One. These are both categories that have historically performed very consistently. And, in fact, COVID was good for the outdoors in terms of participation. Everything grew because people had opportunities to do it. They were shut out of maybe other things where they spent their free time. So those two channels also work well together in cross-promotion, and we found that out in the cable days. They intersect pretty significantly. So from our standpoint, getting to a second channel and then ultimately subsequent channels after that that are basically in the same neighborhood makes sense because the expenses are incremental as you add the subsequent services. You're not, you know, repeating expenses over and over with each additional one.
How did your experience with Outdoor Life shape launching Outdoor America in 2019, and how is that channel differentiated from the Outdoor Channel, which has been around, it seems, forever, for decades at least, as well as Outside Television from the publishers of that magazine? What is the differentiating factor, and how do you get the word out about it?
Well, that's a really good question. So when we were started, you know, in the 90s, it was really about when cable was moving from analog to digital. And we came with Outdoor Life and Speed Vision at around the same time frame as you saw Golf Channel, Tennis Channel, et cetera, you know, kind of specialty services, even the food, is what became kind of the Scripps empire. What's different is that, you know, at that time you had, again, the exclusive middleman, you had a limited shelf space, and when you got one, you worked closely with that distributor and you marketed to the audience, and you were able to aggregate across a broad array of specific content. We kind of covered everything at OLN. We had road cycling, expedition, adventure, and, of course, you know, hunt, fish, camp, hike, bike, water sports, et cetera. So we kept the audiences that are kind of inherently different from one another by day and day part. And now in the world we're in today, you can see more sub-niche audiences, either direct-to-consumer or through the CTV platforms, that have viable economics. Now, a lot of that has to do because the expense side has shrunken so dramatically. But when we started Outdoor America, when we contemplated what this could be, we decided to focus more specifically on field sports and sports kind of related, closely related to field sports, more traditional hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, off-road, et cetera, some paddle sports, some marine. We felt like Outside Magazine and what they do a terrific job on expedition, adventure, exploration, and, you know, what we did do at OLN, but we abdicated that category, so we don't feel like we're competing directly with them. You referenced the legacy MVPD channels. We're actually partnered with them. We partnered with Kroenke Sports and Outdoor Sportsman's Group. We're kind of their fast yin to their MVPD yang. They run. They make the highest quality content and in volume. They've got over a dozen high quality magazines and three MVPD services. So we work directly with them to try and combine the legacy distribution and reach with these new platforms to create the single best offering for the independent producers.
When you cover field sports, are any of them done live? The way that, for example, in recent years, Bassmasters was presented on various networks like TNN and then later on ESPN?
No, we're not going to do anything live. I mean, it would have to be more oriented to specific events, maybe, you know, off-road, like a Baja 1000 or something. The challenge with you know, with Bassmasters, what they experienced is you can't cue the fish, right? You can go live, but there's no guarantee that there's going to be any activity. So I think that live field sports programs have historically struggled for that specific reason.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Nick Rhodes. He is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Obsession Media, currently on the air with Outdoor America, which has been around for several years. It's available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. And this spring, their second channel will go on the air. It's Speed Sport One. We're going to get to that, and we'll find out also what other channels may be in the works from Nick's company. And he joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, our first of three episodes this week. It's our first episode triple header of 2023. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from Nueva York. If you have a question or comment for our guest, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonAppel04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our second episode is on Thursday, and we got a great lead guest for you. Coming off the debut of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches, with a co-star, she plays one of the Mayfairs, the wonderful actress Annabeth Gish, will be our lead guest. That's coming your way Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And you can catch me Wednesday on Sports Newswire. That's the daily sports information show on Sports Grid Network, which is available on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. It's a terrific show on every day at 2 p.m. I usually show up Wednesdays at 2:45 with a TV sports commentary. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about the college football national championship game and how ESPN covers it tonight. We'll also talk maybe about the XFL and the plans for that on television, the return of that league, which was cut short in 2020 because of the coronavirus pandemic. And we may also have some thoughts about how CBS has posted a great public service by running the Buffalo Bills-New England Patriots game as their main 1 o'clock game in a lot of their markets, including New York, where they had a Jet-Miami game that was very consequential for the Dolphins. That they could have run in New York, but they didn't. They did the right move, and we'll talk about that on Sports Newswire. That's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network. Join in. We'd love to have you aboard. Nick, how has Outdoor America evolved over the years it's been on since 2019? And also, how has the advertiser community responded? How have they evolved in terms of what product categories or what products they put on?
Well, on the first part of that, Simon, we're really focused on trying to use technology and automation and you know, what's evolved, and not just for content packaging but for distribution, to try and maximize audiences by putting together some regional applications and regional content packages and delivery. So that that's evolving nicely. We also are looking to cultivate a next generation of talent. I think one of the challenges that everybody in the FAST space that isn't a major media company is faced with is without the distribution fee economics, it's difficult to pencil original programming. So we have to be creative in trying to find people who are out there doing it now and distributing on YouTube and other places, and that's where we're kind of looking next. The second part of the question, the advertiser response has been fantastic. We're doing very well in terms of direct ad sales, and I think that's a reflection really of the group of people we have that have relationships and work directly with the endemic OEMs, because they're not really your traditional, typical programmatic advertisers. That's been a huge change from the days when we were packaging cable TV networks and really every transaction had a human being on both sides of it. Not so much now. There's billions of dollars that are effectively being day traded, but not necessarily in the endemic marketplace. And so we focus our efforts skating to that part of the ice where it isn't really going to be covered by programmatic, and there's going to be sponsorship, integration, and opportunities to get a premium CPM.
Are you finding that there are product categories, let's say like natural foods, vegan products, plant-based products, whether food or otherwise, that say to you, okay, we'd like to come in and come in big?
those categories not in particular, but we are seeing it, again, with the specific outdoor endemic categories. We have a specialty agency we work closely with that has dozens of brands that have embraced the streaming, and, you know, I didn't mention, but we also have a good old-fashioned two-hour syndicated block on broadcast television in just under 70 million homes that goes out every week. So we've seen a really positive response from, I think, the right product categories matched up to the profile of what this audience typically is.
Very happy to say that El Gozo, who was in our chat room the first half hour, he's back with us this half hour, so thanks for coming back aboard. If you have a question or comment for Nick, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or put your thought in the chat room, and we will address it. So let's get to network number two, Speed Sport One. How long has this been the works for? And I understand that this is going to be a mix of live motorsports coverage and all about the category.
Yeah, well, it came about really. We were looking, of course, for a second channel to try and build on the infrastructure we'd already invested in. As I mentioned earlier, it's kind of incremental. And we saw an opportunity in automotive live sports. And so it's been in the works for probably 6 to 8 months. The principals on the brand side, you know, Roger Werner, who has been my mentor, boss, friend for over 30 years and was the sole founder of Speed Vision back in the mid-90s, we were in conversations about what might be possible, and then he was also discussing independently with an executive who now is good, has joined us to become the president of Speed Sport, Dan Teitscheid, who had been at MAV TV and had a long career in senior distribution roles at Viacom and Disney. So we put together what we were thinking about is what is the blue ocean in the category, and it's, you know, Simon, it's not in build shows, it's not in auctions, it's not in special or collector vehicle shows. Now, that was all new when Roger founded Speed Vision in the 90s. We kind of made that market, but you could throw a rock in any direction right now and hit a build show. So we focused our thought process around live racing, because live racing really is not available free anywhere. It's kind of what is available is a lot of it's behind the paywall. And we needed a brand. And then the other piece of that was to partner with Speed Sport, which has been in business as a recognizable automotive editorial and racing editorial brand for 75-plus years. So it came together with Obsession on one side, having content, ingest, packaging, distribution, and existing infrastructure around operations, and then a group of executives and a brand that had great editorial expertise, great history, great relationships. So that's kind of how the partnership was formed. And our objectives are to really build the destination for live motorsports. And we've got about 400 events penciled, we think, in the racing season that will separate us and should be of high interest. We've licensed the best-in-class European marquee OEM-supported racing series. We got vast and varied domestic series. And then the lifestyle behind the scenes and historical content will also be very racing in its orientation. So we're trying to create an offering for the distribution marketplace that's highly differentiated. And I'm sure, you know, as closely as you watch the industry, there's not a lot of live sports on fast platforms right now. So we think we'll be unique in that respect.
Any plans for a daily or weekly Sports Center type show or highlights or magazine show that covers the motorsports world?
There is. I'll just give you the affirmative on that, but I'll save all the details for when we get on the air. We are discussing the specifics of that with the distributors. We're kind of saving it in terms of the consumer marketplace until it's up and running, but your instincts are good. That's a part of our thinking for sure.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, we had Bob Scanlon, who was formerly involved with Speed Vision. He now is involved in a revival of that service that started on multi-channel bundles and smart TV sets and devices a couple of weeks ago. It sounds, when talking to him, that he is not doing the live motorsports. It's not that kind of a service. It's more documentary, more sort of, and trying to also be more about not just auto racing or motorsports, but other types of racing, boat, trailer, RV, motorcycle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it sounds like both of you have very clear lanes to work with.
Yeah, I think that's right. I saw the announcement, and Bob, of course, was a colleague of ours at Speed Vision. He joined us in May of 95 from ESPN after the business had been announced and the funding had been announced, and he was the first programming and production head, and he did a terrific job. And then subsequently, created what the HDNet morphed into Torque TV, morphed into Velocity, and then eventually they merged into what is now Motor Trend. So he has a ton of experience, and he's a very talented creative executive, and most of the work that they did at Velocity and Motor Trend, again, kind of centered around that special interest collector, auction, build show, lifestyle show categories. So I anticipate that that's where he'll probably focus his energies, but I can't speak for him certainly. But it's our understanding right now that, you know, we're kind of alone in terms of the volume of live events that we're focused on putting on our channel.
What's been the reaction to Speed Sport from the various racing leagues or racing organizations, including ones that we may not know about, that don't get a lot of television coverage?
Well, it's been exceptionally positive because there hasn't been a home for a lot of these sanctions for quite a while, actually, really, since, kind of Speed Channel was sunsetted into Fox Sports 1 or morphed into Fox Sports 1. So I think a number of these series have kind of languished without an opportunity to be part of a home-based channel that promoted aggressively the category in addition to the sanctions, and many of them have been relegated to doing time buys on, you know, more widely distributed, branded cable channels, and so the enthusiasm is very high. We exhibited along with the Speed Sport, you know, magazine group at PRI, the Performance Racing Industry Conference in Indianapolis in December, and that, of course, is the choir, but the response was overwhelming. There was so much enthusiasm for it because of all the things I was just articulating. There hasn't been a home-based channel for a number of years, and they'd like to see one come back, and I think that the ability for us to cross-promote and package, you know, sanction-wide, it's good for everybody. It isn't just any particular one sanction. We're trying to raise the level of awareness around the size, depth, and breadth of this aggregate audience and find a home base for it. And so we think that we're going to find a lot of really strong live content that has been unavailable really for a lot of their fans for the last decade or so.
In a moment, we'll find out what obsessions will be coming from Obsession Media in the form of other new channels beyond Speed Sport 1. We're talking with Nick Rhodes. He is the co-founder, chief executive officer of the service and the company, which is based in Los Angeles. That's where he joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom, I'm going to you live from New York, 43 degrees near the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Nick, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our final half hour, we will have our first classic trivia winner of this year. And we'll tell you the answer to the question that we've been posing over the last week. This person is our second weekly winner in a row. And I'll also have a comment about the announcement you didn't hear a lot about at CES 2023, all TV-oriented, and why you didn't hear about it. Part of it was the smart TV set makers themselves, and part of it was no follow-up by the tech press and by CES's organizers. We'll get to all of that in a little bit. And want to remind you that we will have Jeff Minsky. He's Media Village's chief tech columnist. He'll be on our show Friday. He was at CES last week in Vegas. I'll get his TV thoughts about what transpired there and what didn't. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So once Speed Sport is launched, what other channels do you see your company doing?
Well, we have two on the drawing board right now, Simon. I can't really get into what the specific brand names are because of, you know, competitive concerns, but I think we can say that they're in the neighborhood of the nonfiction, primarily male-targeted enthusiast universe that would match up nicely to Outdoor America and Speed Sport 1. Don't mean to give you a limp answer, but they're defined. They've got business plans around them. They've got great people in the early stages behind them, but we're only sharing really what the plans are with the distributors right now. But it's our objective to try and get to four or more FAST services to become a more important supplier, more leveraged supplier for the important Tier 1 distributors. Being a one-off channel is great if you're successful, but you're wasting opportunities to extend the investment into other services, and so that's really what we've been focused on. And Speed Sport 1 is the second of those, and, it, you know, who knows, we may end up stopping there, but I don't think we'll try to quit there. We're certainly going to try and add additional services to take advantage of the investment we've put in infrastructure and operations and technology.
Is the game plan to get all four up and running by end of this year or next year at the latest?
I think it would have to spill into next year, realistically. There's a lead time, of course, once you get an agreement with the important distributors. They're typically running kind of 8 to 12 weeks, and we also don't want to overwhelm our own internal operational staff. The SpeedSport 1 is a pretty tall lift because it's so much live content, and we're dealing with a live workflow. We've got a great experienced technology team to do that, but it's going to be a first in terms of streaming on some of these platforms, so we've got to make sure we get our legs under us with that, I think, before we put our efforts into trying to roll out any additional services.
By the way, has there been any interest among organizations that are dealing with women's motorsports about getting involved with this channel?
It's so early stage. We haven't really, not yet, I guess, is the direct answer to that, but I anticipate that that's an area that should be of interest, and we would welcome it.
We were talking before the program started today, and I got a sense from you that you think this year is going to be a year of reckoning for regional sports networks, that the billions of dollars that they have poured into these networks are going to come due because of lower ratings, because of higher rights fees, because sports betting interactively has not come on the scene as fast as people thought. What's your sense about the RSNC?
Well, it was dependent upon being paid on 100% of a distribution rate base for subscriber fees when on your best nights in many markets, in the case of hockey, 99% of that distribution base was not watching you. When we got started in the late 80s and early 90s with the Prime Networks west of the Mississippi, anchored by Prime Ticket in L.A., particularly in L.A., cable penetration was very low. So the live Lakers, live Kings, SCUCLA was driving cable subscriptions. So the ROI was there for the distributor. And I think it evolved. And you saw, certainly when it consolidated under Fox Sports Net, it was, kind of summit at Everest in terms of, overall value, rights, player salaries, et cetera. And that's continued forward. The divestiture of that kind of exposed it. And unfortunately, it's Sinclair who wound up holding the bag on it. But as all of the other platforms have proliferated, the connected TVs and OTTs, you're not in that environment where you can control the economics. Live sports has continued to stay in that death grip of that business model that's dependent upon those high subscriber fees and the tolerance level for the distributors to pay it now as they shrink in terms of total number of subscribers is just less and less. So I think you're going to see the Jenga block, kind of coming out this year as more and more of the major distributors, the major rights holders have to agree on the next generation. And you're seeing the difficulty of Bally Sports is, it's well chronicled. It's been in the news. And for small market MLB teams, it could create real havoc for them, as in not being able to make payroll. But I think it really is more of a reflection of how the plow horse of the MVPD world, you were able to essentially bury the truth about the size of the actual overall audience. The net weekly circulation for some of these sports is okay, but when you think about it, again, 100% of a distribution pays paying multiple dollars per sub per month, and the actual ratings against that, it couldn't last. So I think it was inevitable it would come apart. What remains to be seen, and I'm sure there's a room full of HBS guys in Burbank right now running numbers about whether or not you can replace these dollars in a direct-to-consumer environment, and we'll see. Some of the contracts, certainly the NFL's long-term rights agreement, they're 11 years now, but I think the winter sports and Major League Baseball, will have to be forced to some level of reckoning unless somewhere this money gets replaced dollar for dollar, and I don't know anybody who's been able to make an argument that that can happen.
Outdoor America is the first of at least four services that Obsession Media hopes to have on the air between now and probably mid to end of 2024. It's available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. Number two is SpeedSport One. It's expected to launch this spring. For more details about both services and the company overall, here's where you go online, www.obsessionmedia.com. It's www.obsessionmedia.com. Nick Rhodes, thanks for joining us again. Very happy New Year to you and your crew. And when Speed Sport One is ready to talk more about its format, we'd love to have you back along with the head of that venture on to detail further. It's been a pleasure.
Look forward to it, Simon. Thanks for having me on the air, and happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you very, very much, Nick. All the greatest. Take care.
You too. Cheers. Bye.
Nick Rhodes from Obsession Media joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, our first classic trivia winner of 2023 and the winning answer, and then a comment about what didn't get reported on a lot involving smart TV sets, particularly innovative smart TV functionality and services at CES 2023 in Las Vegas. And I'll have some thoughts about why. It starts with these presentations on Media Day last Wednesday that I thought ended up being a debacle, particularly LG and Samsung. We'll talk about that after we pause at the bottom of the at the top of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Richard Miller Report. He's the man to talk about all things sports, and he's on tomorrow on Blog Talk Radio, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. The Richard Miller Report, check it out right here tomorrow on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, our first of three episodes this week, our first episode triple head a week of 2023. Simon Avon with you live from New York. One of those just joining us at the top of the hour, 43 degrees here in the Big Apple, nice and sunny. Looks like it's going to be in the 40s all week long. We may get some rain down the stretch. And I understand the weekend, Saturday, a little iffy. Sunday, absolutely great. And we still love to hear from you. If you have a question or comment about what we're talking about, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room still open for you with your thoughts and feedback. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/televised, enter in the room. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, and we get to hear and see what you're up to. And, of course, don't forget that while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker to the screen. Follow the instructions. Obviously, we live with you. First up, we have our first classic trivia winner of 2023 and our second weekly winner in a row. And that person is, and I hope I get the name right, Chelsea Beef from Islip, New York. That's Long Island Way. That's Chelsea Beef from Islip, New York. Congratulations, Chelsea, being our first winner of the year. And coming your way soon, we're going to get you a Vizio Supply notepad with Moleskine and the wonderful Now That's What I Call Music CD with wonderful songs by Bruno Mars, Justin Timberlake, Ariana Grande, Pitbull, Christina Aguilera, Taylor Swift, Pink, Fallout Boy, Nelly, Ludacris, and much, much more. The question we posed last week was this. Name Mariska Hargitay's first television series that ran on CBS in 1986. The series was called Downtown, and it was all about an investigator played by Michael Nouri who signed up a group of parolees, one of them, Jesse Smith, played by Hargitay, to help him out in his crime work. The show ran 13 episodes in the fall of 1986, as it was then repeated during 1987 on CBS. So our classic trivia answer, first one of the year, is Downtown. That was Mariska Hargitay's first television series running on CBS for 13 episodes in the fall of 1986. So once again, congratulations to Charles C. Beast of Islip, New York, for being our first classic trivia winner of the year. Prizes are going to be coming your way before the end of the week, we hope, and hopefully the mail will help us out. And we thank you for playing. We will have our next classic trivia question. We're going to go for winner number three in a row on our episode Thursday. That's our episode where our lead guest will be the wonderful actress who is the co-star of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches, Annabeth Gish. Her series premiered last night on a five-network simulcast, AMC, AMC+, BBC America, IFC, and Sundance TV. Annabeth Gish will be joining me live that Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, as our lead guest, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So be sure to tune in. It's going to be a lot of fun. On our first episode of this year, last Tuesday, we had a comment, part of our new series that we launched late last year called Something I'd Like to See. And the Something I'd Like to See was that smart TV set makers and device makers get more public with the public about what they are doing and the new innovations that they want to offer, the new services that they want to offer you, the public. Last week, before some 115,000 visitors to Las Vegas, and among some 3,200 exhibitors, those smart TV set makers and device makers had a sensational opportunity to let you know what they were up to and what they planned to launch this year. And they blew it. They blew it big time at CES 2023. Why did they blow it? Well, a couple of things. First of all, it was their Media Day presentations this past Wednesday. I want to give you just one of them, LG. Here's what LG announced during their Media Day presentation. One is that they're going to expand their game hub in what's called the Ultimate Gaming Solution to have added on to their current service of games you can play on your television set, the GeForce Now service from NVIDIA, and other developer platforms. Then there was the opportunity to do home security on the television set, including an emergency call feature with a partnership with one of the leading forces in the home security business, ADT. Also, adding on to what they're doing with interactive fitness, a new platform called MaxPro. And check this out, the ability, and I'm not making this up, folks, to set a washing machine cycle through your television set instead of a smart home hub way. That's right, actually able to trigger your washing machine in your home or apartment through your television set. And the most interesting announcement that they had was the fact that with a company called Sansar, S-A-N-S-A-R, they are going to launch a Metaverse TV platform. That's the first time that anybody in public has said, we are going to do a Metaverse project on the television set. Not on the smartphone, not in a visual reality headset or goggles or glasses, augmented reality glasses. We're doing it through the television set. This announcement by itself should have made headlines among every TV reporter and every tech reporter who was at CES. It didn't. Why? Because in a 45-minute presentation that LG did with their top executives in television, they gave one sentence to the Sansar project, one sentence to the ADD project, without saying much about it. A little bit of a sentence on the MaxPro project. They also announced that they're going to launch more than 100 channels that they put together through their LG channels offering on Pluto TV. That's Paramount's multi-channel bundle. In fact, they had Tom Ryan, the head of streaming, the head of Paramount Plus and Pluto TV, there. He was only there for a couple minutes. Did he say about what channels they were going to put on? No. And that's just LG. Now, Samsung, later that day, had a really amazing presentation where they basically said, we are going to turn your television set into a hub to control other appliances, other services in your home or apartment. Everything from how you cook with your appliances, to video chat, to a smart home hub, to a trainer, an interactive training service available 24/7, to pet care, and other essential services, all available through your smart television set. Also, including digital maps, where you can find out where you need to go in a particular situation. They try to make it clear, to some extent, the Samsung execs, that all this is going to happen to your television set using their SmartThings process and the operating system known as Matter. That's, by the way, I should point out that both Samsung and LG are members of an organization called the Home Connectivity Alliance, which, among other things, is trying to encourage the development of smart home hubs with a smart TV set at the core that you can tap into. Again, this should have been story one at CES 2023, or very close to story one. Guess what? It wasn't. You did not see I went to CNetNews.com, went to TechCrunch, other places, not one story about what LG put together. Not one story about what Samsung put together. Not one. Now, why? Well, three things. Number one, the presentation itself. There was very little detail about these services, whether it was LG or Samsung or Hisense, which is now running Google TV as an operating system on their sets and is also looking at doing smart home stuff, or TCL, which is now working with Samba TV on a very exciting research and development project to see how advanced artificial intelligence technology could be incorporated in TV sets for all sorts of unique interactive and special active presentations and services. They wouldn't talk about it. Not only that, not only the lack of detail, minuscule detail, like, oh, we're doing it, that's it. They did not come out with press releases that detailed the detail. Not one press release from LG about the ATT partnership, about the Sandstorm Metaverse TV project partnership, about anything else they were doing. Not one. They had an overall press release about the presentation, and guess what all these new interactive services got? A quarter of a paragraph. All together. That's it. I'm going to repeat what I said on Tuesday. How do you expect the American public to use the services that you're going to introduce if you don't tell them about it, if you don't detail it, if you don't give them a rationale to use them? And all these smart TV set makers that have made Media Day presentations, they're not, by the way, press conferences, they are presentations. Not one would detail these services. In fact, LG last year at their presentation came out with a project called Home Hub, a personal digital video assistant, again available on your television set. So they said in a sentence. From that moment, CES 2022, to last Wednesday, they have not issued a press release at all. Try looking it up on Google, Yahoo, any other search engine. Not one press release from LG about Home Hub. And in fact, on Wednesday, guess what? Right behind one of the speakers on the video wall screen and back in, behind them, there was a little bit about Home Hub. And not much talk about it. You wonder what is in the minds of the marketing, promotion, public relations people and the executives at this company. You really have to wonder. That's number one. Number two, no follow-up. When the executives from LG and all these other companies got off the stage, there was no press conference afterward, no opportunity to immediately meet with tech press and say, hell, what is this you just did with ADT? What is this you just announced with the Metaverse project? Samsung, what did you just do with SmartThings? When are we going to see it on our television sets? Nothing. No wonder there was no coverage. If you don't give the press the opportunity to confer with you, your message is going out the window. And number three, apparently, DES is not allowing the opportunity for these follow-up press conferences. They should. It's about time. And it's also about time that the tech press, and I'm not just talking about the people who cover for things like CNET and Gadget, TechCrunch, et cetera, but we're talking about the tech correspondents at CNBC, Fox Business Network, Fox News Channel, MSNBC, CNN, et cetera, plus the local broadcast stations, and other news services, CBS, NBC, ABC, to get their act together, start talking about the smart TV phenomenon, which it is. It's a phenomenon. 90% of all U.S. households have these products. They deserve to know what announcements have been made that will enhance these products and enhance their lives in the bargain. Yes, we want to learn about the latest automated car, or flying taxi, or health. And by the way, Samsung supposedly was launched a telehealth service. They had nothing to say about it. What happened? Again, no press release on it, so no follow-up. And incidentally, it wasn't just a case of the smart TV set makers and device makers that were at CES. It was also a case of the smart TV set and device makers who weren't at CES, like Roku. Roku, the day before, had a press release announcing that they're getting into the smart TV making business this spring. It would have been nice for them to be there. It would have been nice for them to have a press conference. If they weren't, at least they came out with a press release. And then there's Xumo, which right now is the multi-channel bundle put together by Comcast. It is also the name of a joint project for an operating system and smart TV sets put together by two of the key cable operators, Charter Communications and Comcast, parent of NBC Universal. And they announced that they're getting into the smart TV making business and have their sets available this spring. Same with Roku. Again, they came out with a press release. They should have come out with a press conference or a video or a conference call with the Porter to talk about what they are doing and what functionality they're going to have in these products off the bat and down the road. Same thing with Roku. And then there's Vizio, one of the top TV set makers. Would you believe that Vizio did not have, from my understanding, any presence whatsoever at CES? They didn't have a media day presentation. They didn't come out with a press release. Zip. And again, we're talking about one of the major smart TV set makers that a year and a half ago, almost a year and a half ago at Adweek New York, did a special breakfast that came out with a study co-done by Magid that showed that at least 40% of their smart TV buyers and users were interested in things like grocery delivery, product delivery through the television set, sports betting through the television set, webcams on the TV, home security on the TV, and others. In fact, we had, in the fall of 2021, we had the people behind the study from Vizio and Magid on this very program to talk about it. And we haven't heard of anything since. That was a shocker. Not one thing from Vizio. It really is a shame that the biggest consumer technology showplace, which, by the way, kudos to Gary Shapiro and everybody at the Consumer Technology Association, the organizers of CES, for what they did to get back to over 100,000 attendees and 3,200 exhibitors so soon after their first in-person visit since the pandemic broke out in 2020, last January, is really a tremendous accomplishment. One other thought. We have sent an email out to ADT. We have sent an email out to Sansar. We have sent an email out to the Home Connectivity Alliance. We want to get people from those organizations on the program to talk about their various ventures with LG and Samsung. And anytime that the smart TV set mega device makers want to come on this program, we've had great conversations with them in the past. We'd love to have them again. But I go back to what I said. Last, smart TV set makers and device makers, if you want your audience to use the services that you are going to introduce this year, the new smart TV functionality that could very well have incredible consequences short and long term for how we watch and use television, you have to talk about them. You cannot keep it to yourself. You cannot be mishy-mashy with details. And if you can't spell out the details, don't make the announcement. And at least come out with a press release. If you don't have time to make the announcement in full detail, come out with a press release that tells us what this is all about, when it's going to come out, and who to speak with. I'm really sad that this happened at CES. And we'll have more to say about this with Jeff Minsky on our show Friday. And I'd love to hear from you. What did you think about CES 2023? Did the smart TV industry blow it by how they did and didn't do their media day presentations, not come out with press releases about their new services, interactive and otherwise, on their TV, on their smart TV set models, and much more? So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And by the way, that's how you also get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. Again, congratulations to Charles C. Beast from Islip, New York. She's our first winner of the year, our second weekly winner in a row. We'll have a brand new classic trivia question for you on Thursday's episode with Annabeth Gish from Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches. If you know the answer and pose the question, email me. Again, use that email, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And make sure when you email with the answer, you include your name and mailing address. We can get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end of Thursday afternoon, we will post the question Friday morning on Facebook and Twitter. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, all you got to do is play in. That's how we get winners. And we'd love the next winner to be you. Before we wrap things up for today, a very special personal note. As some of you might know, I have been dealing for the last 3 months with a personal health issue. It's impacted me in all sorts of ways. And I want you to know that on Friday morning, I had a procedure that hopefully tomorrow morning I have a follow-up with my doctor that hopefully will resolve this for good. First of all, I want to thank in public Mount Sinai Union Square. What fantastic facility in Union Square, Manhattan. The doctors and nurses there were just absolutely sensational. And I want to acknowledge Dr. Stein, who is the doctor in charge of the procedure that I went through. And I want to acknowledge my brother Gary, who got me there in plenty of time and got me back in plenty of time as well. And I want to particularly thank all of you in the TV industry and outside the TV industry who have been sending me Facebook responses to my postings since Friday. I deeply appreciate your thoughts and your prayers. I have a wonderful support system. I get that to the max, and you give me incredible hope. One way or another, and hopefully tomorrow morning, we are going, everything willing, we're going to lick this. And we're licking this in part because all of your great thoughts and your great feedback and your great prayers. Keep them coming. I deeply appreciate you. I deeply appreciate my family, mom and dad, sister Stephanie, brother Gary, all of our friends, our love cousins, and all the people in the TV industry, the ballroom dance world, the flamenco world that have been responding to my situation, particularly over the last 3 days since I had the procedure on Friday morning. And again, thank you to Mount Sinai Union Square. It's a fantastic facility, and you could not – it is really one of the best. I'll tell you, New York is one of the best hospital places around with facilities like Mount Sinai Union Square and NYU Langone and others I've been dealing with a lot in recent years. They're just the best, and I thank them all. They really make it happen, and they do perform miracles every day. So thank you. And again, everything willing, we will resolve this once and for all by end of day tomorrow. Again, I want to thank both of our guests for being here, Jeb Stewart from Vikings Valhalla and Nick Rhodes from Obsession Media. Thursday on Tomorrow We Televise, our special second edition of our episode Triple Header with Annabeth Gish, the co-star of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches on AMC and AMC+. And on Friday, with his thoughts about the TV scene at CES 2023, MediaGo's technology columnist Jeff Minsky. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcasts. They are available 24/7 on a wide variety of great podcast sites like Spotify, the iRadio Podcast Network, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Acast, Podbean.com, Verbal, et cetera, et cetera. And also check out our website, tomorrowwetelevise.onpodium.com. That's tomorrow will be televised, hyphens between the words, .onpodium.com. If you have a question about television, about anything I say, about what our guests say, there's a question box at the bottom of the home screen. Check it out. I get the questions, and if we use your question on the air, of course, you get the credit. It is a pleasure to do this program. I'm very excited about what 2023 is going to bring. I know there's a lot of challenges for this medium and a lot of excitement about what this medium is going to cause this year and next year and the rest of this decade. And I'm looking forward to covering it with all of you tuning in. If you like the program, tell a friend and have them be with us on our show Thursday with Annabeth Gish from Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches. And we'd love to hear from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, if you're involved in our classic trivia question, which we'll have a new question for you on Thursday, put down your name and mailing address. And remember, we also have a feature called A Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? Use that email to give us the attention. And if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. You also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum. Twitter at UBC Simon TWET. That's Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum. and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. However you reach us, we reach back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. Believe me. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toews, BeachHard General Manager, Dave Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website service by On Podium, the Internet's podcast outpost. Guitars Vegas is our web coordinator. For tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. We are back, everything willing, on Thursday with Annabeth Gish from Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Signature Tune Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, and our website. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And until the next time, and stay tuned.